Delegations from the US and Ukraine are due to meet in Saudi Arabia next week to discuss what Washington calls an initial ceasefire with Russia. EU leaders have agreed at an emergency summit to boost defence spending, a move described by one senior official as putting our money where our mouth is. More of the tariffs imposed on Canada and Mexico earlier this week have been suspended by the White House. It's emerged the former soldier who killed his ex-girlfriend, her sister and their mother had watched videos of the controversial influencer Andrew Tate before the attack. Pope Francis has recorded an audio message for the first time since being admitted to hospital with pneumonia. In it, he thanks people for their prayers, but sounds breathless. Also tonight, touchdown on the moon, but at a wonky angle. Again. President Zelensky says delegations from Ukraine and the US will meet in Saudi Arabia on Tuesday for talks about the war with Russia. The Ukrainian leader, who won't attend the discussion, says he's hoping for a meaningful meeting and that Kyiv is working to reach a fast and lasting peace. The announcement comes after President Trump stopped sharing intelligence with Ukraine and paused military aid. Separately, the UK Defence Secretary John Healey has dismissed suggestions that the US has abandoned Europe, following a meeting with his American counterpart Pete Hegseth in Washington. From there, our North America correspondent Merlin Thomas.
In his first 6 weeks in office, President Trump has upended widely held assumptions about the global order and who the US calls friend or foe. After Mr. Trump withdrew support for Ukraine and appeared to embrace Russia, America's traditional allies were left questioning whether the US was a reliable security partner. But when John Healey was asked whether the UK had been abandoned by the US, he was certain that wasn't the case.
The US has challenged, the President and the Defence Secretary has rightly challenged Europe to step up on Ukraine, on defence spending and on European security. We have and we will further. But the US remains the UK's closest ally.
Mr. Healey's trip comes after Sir Keir Starmer announced a rise in the UK's defence spending to 2.5% of GDP. Mr. Healey also said the UK would play a leading role in getting nations to work together for what needed to be done in the future. Speaking in the Oval Office, President Trump was asked whether he would visit Saudi Arabia to meet Russia's President Vladimir Putin.
I don't know. I can't tell you. I'm going to Saudi Arabia.
Senior aides, though, will be in the Gulf state next week. They've said they're in discussions with Ukraine about a framework for a peace agreement with Russia. President Zelensky says he will be in Saudi Arabia on Monday.
President Trump has repeated a warning that he won't defend NATO members who fail to spend enough on defence. His comments came as European Union leaders met in an emergency session in Brussels, where they agreed to increase military spending. The president of the European Council, Antonio Costa, has said the bloc's members are putting our money where our mouth is. Our Europe correspondent Nick Beek reports from Brussels.
Less than a week ago, President Zelensky was publicly castigated in the Oval Office before being unceremoniously ejected from the White House. His welcome by EU leaders was a world away from that. Hugs, smiles, and the warmest of words. Volodymyr Zelensky thanked Europe for those words and actions too, and promised Ukraine would repay that support by helping to bolster the security of the whole continent.
We are very thankful that we are not alone, and these are not just words, we feel it. It's very important. You made a strong signal to Ukrainian people, to Ukrainian warriors, to civilians, to all our families, to increase our production and signals to, with a new program, to increase the European security.
But Europe has the immediate and huge task of filling the gap left by President Trump's suspension of military aid for Ukraine. This week, the President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, announced a €800 billion plan to transform the defence industries of the 27 EU countries. Although missiles, tanks and drones will not appear overnight.
This is a watershed moment for Europe. It's also a watershed moment for Ukraine. Europe faces a clear and present danger, and therefore Europe has to be able to protect itself, to defend itself, as we have to put Ukraine in a position to protect itself and to push for a lasting and just peace.
Peace feels a long way off, as Russian missiles rain down on Ukrainian towns and cities. Neighbouring Poland says it can't commit to sending peacekeeping troops in the future because they're needed at home in case Russia attacks Poland. Prime Minister Donald Tusk invoked the Cold War as he vowed Moscow would lose a 21st century arms race.
There is no doubt the war in Ukraine, the new US administration's approach to Europe, and above all, the arms race started by Russia, pose completely new challenges. Europe must take up these challenges, this arms race, and must win it. I'm convinced that Russia will lose this arms race, just as the Soviet Union lost a similar arms race 40 years ago.
Tonight, all 27 leaders endorsed plans to loosen spending rules in order to boost investment in defence. But Hungary's Viktor Orbán, with his Moscow sympathies, refused to sign a text pledging continued support for Ukraine. He's argued Europe should now follow Donald Trump's lead, pick up the phone to President Putin and thrash out a peace deal.
Russia has issued a fresh warning that it won't accept European peacekeeping troops in Ukraine under any deal to end the war. The foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, said any such deployment would be seen as Europe's direct involvement in a war against his country. Our Russia editor, Steve Rosenberg, reports from Moscow.
For weeks now, Russian officials have been rejecting the idea of a European peacekeeping force in Ukraine, claiming that would amount to NATO in Ukraine through the back door. In Moscow today, I asked the Russian foreign minister whether there'd been any change to that position. Not in the slightest. There is no room for compromise here, Sergei Lavrov said. Whatever flag a European peacekeeping operation would be under, these would still be troops from NATO countries. It would mean, he added, the direct, official and unconcealed involvement of NATO in the war against Russia. We mustn't allow this to happen. It's hard to see it happening unless President Trump backs the idea and convinces the Kremlin to agree. And there was no hint of compromise from President Putin either, when he met a group of Russian women, some of whom had lost sons and husbands fighting in Ukraine. The Kremlin leader said, "We're not going to give ground. We need the kind of peace that suits us." Russia is feeling increasingly confident about the war. It comes from seeing an American president increasing the pressure on Ukraine. And as a result, there seems to be less and less desire here to make concessions, to compromise.
Ukraine's ambassador to the UK, Valeriy Zaluzhny, has accused the US of destroying the international rules-based order by engaging with Russia. Speaking at a Chatham House think tank event in London, he warned delegates there was a risk NATO could collapse. The comments are in stark contrast to the tone adopted by President Zelensky in recent days. Our security correspondent Frank Gardner reports.
There are two conflicting narratives coming out of Ukraine today. There's the conciliatory one from President Zelensky, trying hard to repair the damage done by his very public row with President Trump. Then there's this. That's Ukraine's ambassador to London, Valeriy Zaluzhny. The US, he bluntly told a security conference today at the Chatham House think tank, is destroying the international rules-based order. He branded President Putin a war criminal and said the White House was, as he put it, making steps towards the Kremlin, trying to meet them halfway. When it comes to peace talks, the Trump administration does appear to be applying pressure on one side only, Ukraine, while making no public demands on Moscow. General Zaluzhny's intervention is significant, not just because he is ambassador to London, but because he's tipped to be a possible successor to Volodymyr Zelensky. A recent poll gives the former general a popularity rating of 70%, compared with President Zelensky at 57%. US officials are reported to have been meeting Ukrainian opposition figures, and the White House has made no secret of the fact it would prefer to deal with someone other than Mr. Zelensky.
New Zealand has sacked its top diplomat in the UK after he questioned Donald Trump's grasp of history at a panel discussion in London. The High Commissioner, Phil Goff, compared recent American efforts to end the war in Ukraine with the Munich Agreement in 1938 and asked whether the US president really understood history. New Zealand's foreign ministry called the comments deeply disappointing and said they didn't represent the view of the government. More goods from both Canada and Mexico are now being exempted from US trade tariffs in what amounts to the second climb down by the White House this week. Mexico's president, Claudia Sheinbaum, said a phone call with Donald Trump had yielded unprecedented results. Canada has reciprocated by pausing its own tariffs on US products, although its prime minister, Justin Trudeau, has predicted a trade war is still likely. Our North America business correspondent, Erin Delmore, reports from New York.
President Trump has suspended tariffs on all goods and services from Mexico and Canada that are in compliance with an agreement signed during his first term that already governs trade between the U.S. and its North American neighbors. This exemption covers around 50% of Mexican imports and around 38% of Canadian imports. The pause extends until the 2nd of April. Earlier this week, Mr. Trump announced 25% import taxes on all Mexican and Canadian goods and services, then granted an exemption to car manufacturers. Both countries are among the U.S.'s top three trading partners, along with China, which did not receive any exemptions from tariffs that doubled to 20% earlier this week. Latest government data reveals that imports into the U.S. increased by 10% in January, as Mr. Trump took office with promises to impose sweeping tariffs on imported goods. The rise sent the U.S. trade deficit to its highest figure on record at $131.4 billion. Importers appear to have preemptively shipped in goods to avoid potential future taxes promised by Mr. Trump on the campaign trail.
The European Central Bank has cut interest rates to try to boost economic growth in the eurozone. The ECB's main rate now stands at 2.5%, down by a quarter of 1%. With inflation getting closer to its 2% target, the ECB said it was making new borrowing less expensive for firms and households. A man has been found guilty of raping his ex-partner before murdering her, her sister and their mother. Kyle Clifford, who's 26 and from North London, had already admitted shooting Louise Hunt and her sister Hannah with a crossbow. He also stabbed their mother Carol at the family's home in Bushey in Hertfordshire last year. Among those in the public gallery for the verdict was Louise Hunt's father, the BBC racing commentator John Hunt. Our special correspondent, Lucy Manning, sent this report from Cambridge Crown Court.
The Hunt family was ripped apart last July by Carl Clifford, who the police described as a cold, calculating murderer. Clifford had admitted the killings, but said he hadn't raped Louise Hunt. The jury took just 45 minutes to find him guilty of that offence. Clifford meticulously planned his attack. Just 2 days after Louise Hunt broke up with him, he went to buy a rope. Then he bought petrol cans, a crossbow, duct tape and a knife. The day before, he watched a video by controversial social media influencer Andrew Tate. Prosecutors say the violent misogyny fuelled him. During the attack, Clifford texted Louise's father, the BBC racing commentator John Hunt, using her phone to ask when he would be home. John replied to say, "Late, I'm afraid. Is everything okay, sweetness?" Clifford refused to answer any of the police questions and chose not to leave his prison cell for this trial. Mr. Hunt and his other daughter Amy heard the guilty verdict in court. Family and friends in the public gallery clapped briefly and said yes. Some of them were in tears. Detective Chief Inspector Nick Gardner is from Hertfordshire Police.
I think having had to sit through the ordeal of a trial, I know they'll be relieved and pleased with the outcome. They sat through all of it, whereas Clifford was a complete coward throughout, despite every opportunity for him to come to court. To listen in via live link, he failed to do so, which was truly cowardly on his part.
Clifford will be sentenced for the triple murders and rape next week.
Pope Francis has issued his first public message since being admitted to hospital in Rome last month. The 88-year-old has been treated for double pneumonia for the past 3 weeks. His condition worsened on Monday after he suffered respiratory failure. The message was played during evening prayers in St. Peter's Square, to the surprise of the crowd gathered there. Our correspondent in Rome, Sarah Rainsford, has been listening.
This is the first that we've heard from the Pope in 3 weeks, and it is a short message of thanks delivered from his hospital, played out to all those who've gathered on St. Peter's Square to pray for his health, as they have every night here. It's just 22 seconds long, and Pope Francis struggles for breath even so. But in his native Spanish, he thanks Catholics from the bottom of his heart for their prayers, and he tells them he's with them. The Vatican says the message was recorded today. It'll be heard by Catholics around the world with a mixture of relief and worry because the Pope sounds so weak.
The England and Wales Cricket Board has apologised for a social media post joking that Pope Francis loves the Ashes. The ECB was responding to a message on the Pope's official account on X to mark Ash Wednesday. Here's our sports correspondent, Katie Gornall.
Pope Francis posted a message to his social media account to mark Ash Wednesday, the start of the holy season of Lent. He wrote, "The ashes remind us of who we are, which does us good. It makes us more humble and open to one another." The message was reposted by the England cricket account, along with the words, "Even the Pontiff loves the Ashes." The England and Wales Cricket Board has since said that the apparent attempt at humour by the team's social media staff had been ill-judged and that the post in question had been swiftly deleted. They said they apologise for any offence.
NHS England's National Medical Director, Professor Sir Stephen Powis, is to step down from the role in the summer. Last week, Amanda Pritchard announced she was leaving her position as Chief Executive. Sir Stephen was a regular at Downing Street news conferences during the pandemic and was present when the first COVID jab was given to Margaret Keenan in December 2020. Our health editor, Hugh Pym, reports.
With Professor Sir Stephen Powis announcing he'll step down barely a week after the chief executive Amanda Pritchard said she would quit, there is the impression of a vacuum of leadership in the NHS in England. Health officials said the two were not linked and that Professor Powis had indicated a desire to leave back in January. He'll stay in his post till July.
Plain and simply, I think it's about time I handed the baton over to somebody else. I've been really privileged to be in this role, but in a sense I'm a custodian of a role. It's not for me permanently.
The Chief Medical Officer, Sir Chris Whitty, said Stephen Powis had been a remarkable clinical leader in the NHS during the most difficult crisis in its history, the COVID pandemic. The announcements come at a time of significant change, with the Health Secretary Wes Streeting wanting to bring NHS England under his department's wing and to slim it down. The two have worked as separate organisations since reforms in 2013. The aim of the government plan is to free up resources in the central administration and reallocate them to regional health boards. The question now is whether this will create more uncertainty, with NHS managers struggling to cope with crowded emergency departments and a waiting list for planned treatment of nearly 7.5 million.
A review of how Essex Police handled a hate crime investigation into a social media post by the journalist Alison Pearson has concluded that the force acted reasonably. Ms Pearson, who is a columnist for the Daily Telegraph, said she felt bullied and threatened when officers went to her home in an attempt to arrange a voluntary interview. Simon Jones has more.
Alison Pearson was accused by a member of the public of inciting racial hatred after she commented on a social media picture of a group of men holding a Pakistani political flag, calling them Jew haters. Two officers went to her home and she described their visit last November as an unwarranted intrusion of the state. Ms Pearson said the police told her they were dealing with a so-called non-crime hate incident where no criminal offence had been committed. The person reporting it believed the incident to be motivated by hostility. But Essex Police have insisted she hadn't been told that. The case was closed when the CPS found there was no realistic prospect of conviction, and a review by the National Police Chiefs Council has concluded that Essex Police made decisions in good faith without fear or favour. In a post on X, Ms Pearson has since accused the police of marking their own homework.
Data obtained by MPs has revealed that nine banks and building societies experienced tech outages that totaled more than 800 hours or 33 days over the past 2 years. The Treasury Committee has been investigating IT failures, which prevented customers from accessing their accounts. Some of the banks are paying compensation. Our senior technology reporter, Graham Fraser, has more.
Banking outages have left millions of customers unable to pay their bills, pay their staff, or even complete the purchase of new homes. The nine banks investigated by the MPs were Barclays, HSBC, Lloyds, Nationwide, Santander, NatWest, Danske Bank, Bank of Ireland, and Allied Irish Bank. Barclays could face compensation payments of £12.5 million for its problems over the past 2 years. Dame Meg Hillier, who chairs the Treasury Committee, says one reason for the outages kept cropping up.
Well, we were quite keen to see when we wrote to the nine banks if there was any pattern, and it seems to be it is software failures, quite often from third parties. But, you know, this is really distressing for customers when they can't pay a bill. The Barclays outage was, of course, on payday, and since then we've seen four banks have problems at the end of February, also on payday. So this is a particularly bad time to have these challenges.
The two payday incidents referred to there were not included in the data in this report, but Barclays has now outlined more details of what happened in January. Some customers were left without access to their money for 3 days following that outage. The bank says the problem was caused by a software issue with its systems, and the incident was not due to a cyber attack or any other malicious activity. With bank branches disappearing from high streets and a cashless society becoming the reality for more and more people, the MPs say they will keep looking into the banks to make sure that when you want access to your money online, you can get it.
Official figures show a record number of people across the UK used government grants to install a heat pump in their home last year. Just under 100,000 were sold in total in 2024. The number supported by a grant was about half that and up 52% on 2023. The government has launched a nationwide television campaign to encourage more people to make the change. Our climate editor, Justine Rowlatt, has been watching.
You know, we're doing up the place.
Yeah, so we thought let's upgrade and get a heat pump.
The new ad campaign is part of an effort to get more of us to switch to the low-carbon heating system. The government has doubled the pot of cash available for the £7,500 grant to £300 million.
No! Hey, that's mine!
The Rixton family in Cambridgeshire replaced their old gas boiler with a heat pump last March.
It's just really cosy, like when you go up to your room to for bed, it's like quite nice and it doesn't feel like how it used to feel.
Heat pumps don't heat radiators as hot as gas boilers do, but the kids say the house is still cosy. Their dad, James, says he opted for the greener option, even though it cost him £4,000 on top of the £7,500 grant.
It was more expensive to buy initially, even with the government, even with the current government grant. But it's working out comparable and then quite a number of months cheaper than original gas boiler.
Putting in a heat pump is the biggest thing most people can do to cut the carbon footprint of their home. Record numbers were sold last year, just shy of 100,000. But that is still way off the government's target of 600,000 installations a year by 2028. Heat pumps are very efficient, but because electricity is so much more expensive than gas, they tend to cost about the same to run, which is why last month the government's climate advisers said more should be done to cut electricity prices.
A private company says its lunar lander, Athena, has touched down on the moon at a wonky angle. Intuitive Machines has teamed up with the US space agency NASA to explore the lunar surface. It isn't sure what condition Athena is in, but signals are being sent back to Earth. Our science reporter Georgina Ranard has more.
At first, the mission appeared to be a success when the Athena spacecraft touched down near the moon's south pole. But in a news conference, Intuitive Machines chief executive Steve Altemus then said the machine, which is about the size of a telephone box, did not land upright. He said that Athena was communicating with Earth and the company was trying to diagnose the fault. It still hopes to deploy the sophisticated scientific instruments on board to look for evidence of water ice on the moon. That includes a hopping robot that could leap into a shadowed crater and a drill to penetrate the lunar surface to release gases. This is the second time Intuitive Machines has landed a spacecraft lopsided. Last year, its Odysseus machine broke a leg after a difficult descent. NASA is working with private companies to try to make space exploration cheaper. It wants to send 4 astronauts to the moon in 2027 in its Artemis program. But the moon rush is heating up as more countries, including India and China, compete in the race for dominance and resources.
Butterflies are disappearing across America at what scientists say is an alarming rate. A new study from Binghamton University in New York shows that populations have shrunk by more than 20% over the past 20 years. The researchers say the insects are fundamental to life on Earth, but pesticides and climate change are contributing to their decline, and that could disrupt food production and entire ecosystems. Our reporter, Maddie Malloy, has more details.
Butterflies are vital to ecosystems because as well as being beautiful, they pollinate plants. This research from Brigham University in New York shows how vulnerable they are in the US. Some species, such as the Hermes copper, a small yellow and black spotted butterfly, and the West Virginia white, a tiny woodland butterfly, have lost more than 98% of their population in 2 decades. Habitat destruction, pesticides, and climate change are being blamed. Last year, the butterfly conservation charity in the UK declared an emergency when its annual count recorded the lowest numbers of butterfly ever. But experts say there's hope. Simple actions, planting wildflowers and reducing pesticides could help butterflies rebound. Researchers say that with urgent conservation, these winged pollinators may still have a fighting chance.
Scientists in Australia have discovered the world's oldest known crater caused by the impact of a meteorite. It was found in a remote area in the northwest of the country. The crater is more than 60 miles wide and is believed to have formed 3.5 billion years ago. The researchers from Curtin University in Perth said the impact could have sent debris flying across the world and could have played a role in shaping Earth's crust. The Danish Postal Service will stop delivering letters from next year. PostNord said numbers had fallen by 90% over the past 25 years and that it would now focus on parcel deliveries. Risto Pukka reports on a decision that will change the look of the country's streets.
For centuries, the postman in his red uniform has been a familiar part of life in Denmark. But at the end of the year, he will be consigned to history, as will the red postal boxes that dot the country's streets. PostNord blames emails. People send fewer letters than before. The company has also lost a big source of its income, the contract to deliver government post. It will still be possible to send private letters, but they won't be delivered by the postman, but a private company.
Now for a look at the morning papers. The huge boost to defence spending agreed by European leaders in Brussels has been hailed as a watershed moment by The Guardian. The paper notes the show of unity was marred by Hungary's Prime Minister, who failed to endorse a joint statement calling for Ukrainian involvement in peace negotiations with Russia. Brussels vows to back Kiev, says the Financial Times. The Daily Telegraph says some of the UK's biggest pension firms have been accused of blocking efforts to boost defence spending. Aviva, Royal London and Nest are among the group allegedly restricting investment in the sector on environmental, social and governance grounds, according to the paper. A Nest spokesman is quoted as saying defence companies form part of the firm's portfolio. Betrayed again, reads the Daily Mirror's headline. The paper says bosses at Nottingham's NHS Trust fear staff illegally accessed the A&E records of the three victims of a fatal knife attack in 2023. Ian Coates, Barnaby Webber and Grace O'Malley Kumar were killed by Valdo Kallikane. Their families tell the Mirror the reports are sickening. The American jazz musician Roy Ayers has died in New York at the age of 84. He released more than 30 studio albums and, as my colleague Tom Sanders explains, his hit Everybody Loves the Sunshine remains one of the most sampled and influential jazz recordings in history. My life, my life, my life, my life in the sunshine.
Everybody loves the sunshine. A pioneer of jazz funk, Roy Ayers was an influence for the neo-soul movement. He also inspired a range of big-name artists, from Mary J. Blige to Pharrell Williams and Tyler, the Creator. Jazzy B, the DJ and founder of the music collective Soul to Soul, says Roy Ayers had a refreshing and creative approach to music production.
Ayers is legendary in terms of inspiration, and he just had such a huge effect on us throughout the club culture to where we are today, celebrating his life and his legacy.
Roy Ayers was also known for popularising the vibraphone, a percussion instrument with a distinctive vibrato sound. The award-winning multi-jazz vibraphonist Orphy Robinson knew Roy Ayers. He says his albums set the tone for his own musical career.
I was a young musician who was not really sure of which direction to go into, and then I realised, hearing Vibes on the record, that vibraphone was one of the instruments that I played, and it could be cool.
The headlines again. Delegations from the US and Ukraine will meet in Saudi Arabia next week to discuss the war with Russia. European Union leaders have agreed to boost defence spending during an emergency meeting in Brussels. President Trump has delayed the imposition of more tariffs targeting Canada and Mexico. The Pope has released an audio message from hospital thanking people for their prayers. A private company says its spacecraft Athena has touched down on the moon, but at a wonky angle. BBC News.
With Jim Lee. And now with a look at the weather forecast for the next 24, 48 hours and beyond. Good morning, Louise Lear.
Good morning. Thursday was the warmest day of the year so far, with 19 degrees recorded in Suffolk and plenty of blue sky and sunshine. Now, we're keeping that warmth overnight, so in actual fact, it's going to be an incredibly mild start to Friday morning. Some areas 10 degrees milder than the last few mornings, so frost-free, but there will also be some showery outbreaks of rain around for Friday. So let's start our forecast in Scotland and Northern Ireland. Here, not a bad day. Sunny spells, largely fine and dry, and lighter winds than the last couple of days, with highs likely of 10 to 13 degrees. A warm front will continue to bring some showery outbreaks of rain into northern England and Wales, and that's going to gradually drift its way northwards towards the Scottish borders. There'll also be a few scattered showers, really, if we draw a line from the Isle of Wight up through the Midlands towards East Yorkshire, and some of these could be quite heavy at times. But east of that, we keep the sunshine and the warmth. So generally across England and Wales, highs of 12 to 14 degrees, but in eastern England, we could see 16 Celsius once again. Now, as we move into the start of the weekend, an area of low pressure will park itself to the southwest of the UK. That could throw a few scattered showers from time to time out to the south and west as we go through the weekend. But all in all, the weekend is shaping up to be quite pleasant. A lot of dry weather around on Saturday, and again, highs of 16 degrees. As we go into Sunday, the wind direction perhaps changing to a little bit more of an easterly, so a fresher feel on exposed North Sea coast. But again, a lot of dry, settled, sunny weather around, and inland we could see highs of 17 Celsius. Make the most of the weekend sunshine and warmth, because it's all change into next week as high pressure builds and a northerly wind returns. So plenty of dry, settled weather, but also a return to some nighttime frosts. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you, Louise, and you too. Louise Lear with the Late Night Weather Bulletin. And now, Radio 4, Juliet Stevenson and Dira Varma, Chipo Chung and Sharla Nix read the next episode of My Dear Kabul. Today, it's 3 months since Afghanistan fell, and the effects continue to be felt keenly.
My Dear Kabul, by writers in the Paranda Group. Episode 4, Winter. In November 2021, winter is coming and the snow is falling. Niloufar was studying towards a degree in literature. She was in her final year when the Taliban took over. Her schooling had been disrupted during her childhood, so she went to university as an